Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We're always interested in your thoughts. Drop us a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com with your suggestions and comments. Let us know what's going on where you are. Well, it's bicycle season, the 160-mile ride across Indiana, also called the Rain Ride, sponsored by the Bloomington Bicycle Club, is scheduled for July 11th. In case a one-day bike trip across the entire state is not on your bucket list this year, a more modest trip is also scheduled for July 18th. The Trailblazer Ride starts on the Cardinal Greenway in Gaston, about 15 miles north of Muncie, and goes south 35 miles to LaSanville, and then back the next day. It's sponsored by Wandering Wheels in Upland. Details at wanderingwheels.org. The group is led by Bob Davenport and his wife Janish. Bob is a former Taylor football coach who has led dozens of bike trips across the entire country. At age 82, he's still riding, but admits he's a little slower these days. He looks back to how it all started with a plan to help young people in need of some direction.
The Wandering Wheels program got started as a result of my being a public speaker at commencements, baccalaureates, athletic banquets, church camps. I was a former football player from UCLA and had the good fortune of being twice elected All-American. And so that gave me a little status for talking to kids. And I did that for about 20 years and got burnt out. Just couldn't tell the same story over and over again. But I didn't feel like I was communicating with the kids. I wanted to experience change on their part. And I realized I wanted to get down and dirty with them, rather than I was still pretty young and active. And so rather than being a coat and tie and speaking from a podium, I decided I wanted to find something that was just mean enough, tough enough, that it would wind up kind of giving them bragging rights if they came to do this activity with us. They'd go home and unapologetically bragging about what they'd just done. Unlike going to a church service, nothing wrong with church, but unlike going to church service or to a lecture, this was hands-on. This was, they got down and got dirty. And I decided on long-distance bike touring. Knew nothing about bikes as such, but I just knew that if I could get them out on a bicycle running 75 to 100 miles a day, that there would be enough just hands-on serendipity, what we would call coincidence, that had a way of making prayer practical, making thankfulness practical. And so 1964, I bought 15 bicycles from an Olympic coach by the name of Eugene Portuisi in Detroit, and brought them back to Upland and found 15 kids. And when I say found them, I'd kind of been milking this thing for several weeks. And I had a team of 15 and bought an old beat up pickup truck to carry our gear. And the moms and dads helped me drive them up to Mille Lacs Lake, which is the headwaters of Mississippi. We're gonna ride 1,000 miles on the Great River Road. And had no idea, no format, nothing to tell me that this thing would work. And it was a lot more rigorous than I ever planned on being. And the kids were young enough that they didn't know what they were getting into any more than I did. But we wound up making the whole trip. I vowed I'd never do it again. It was too tough. It was tougher than I planned on being. And but by the time I'd finished the trip, got the kids home, my phone started ringing on the line. Moms and dads of the neighbors, and they wanted their son to have a similar experience. Had one mother bring her boy to me, say, bring him back changed or dead. And you know, that rich age of 15 where mom and son are kind of having their bouts. And that mother, by the way, as a result of things that happened in his life, wrote me a letter and told me that her son was a changed boy.
How many of these cross-country trips has your group made, and what changes have you seen this work on these young people?
We've done 68 coast to coast. That means we've gone to one ocean and pedaled all the way across America to the other. I have personally ridden 43 of them, escorted on a motorcycle the other trips.
What's the effect that this has on young people?
thankfulness, gratitude, heartfelt, nothing made up, just heartfelt, coming almost wells up within them when they get home. Thank you, Mom and Dad, for it. And there are little things that you're just so down to earth that you take for granted. One of the beautiful stories that I'll never forget is on that first trip, having the boys go to the laundromat. They'd been out on the road, never done their own, I don't think any of them had ever done any washing of their own personal clothes. Took them to a laundromat, and they had to spend their own personal money, take their dirty clothes, and not having any idea, had to buy soap. Didn't realize you had to buy soap, thought it grew out of a tree. And they wound up mixing their dark clothing with their light clothing. And almost hilarious when they pulled out their white t-shirts and they were pastel yellow or pink or blue. So they realized what it cost to do clothing, wash your clothes, and they found out it's no small task. In fact, the one boy that I talked about earlier who went on back home thanked his mother. First time she had ever thanked her for washing his clothes. He said, Mom, the clothes were folded, stacked on his dresser, and he said to his mother, thank you, Mom, for washing my clothes. That blew her away, just that simple little act of gratitude.
How do you ride a bicycle all the way across the country? How long does it take? It must be an enormous physical undertaking.
Well, it is. Coordinating the slowest with the fastest, the strongest with the weakest. You had made mention earlier of my growing appreciation for, I worked with football players. I was an All-American, I was a jock, and I had a tendency to relate more favorably toward the jock. But the biking introduced me to the little skinny kid, the kid who had a want and a will that I didn't find some of the more gifted athletes had. And I fell in love with these young, scrawny little guys who wound up being the ones to volunteer for any task I asked for help with, that kind of thing. It was a real eye-opener for me.
So it's more than just physical ability. Can anybody do this?
It's in the brain, the want. I advertised, I don't really do any serious advertising, but if you want it, we'll get you across. So we'll slow down our pace, we'll do whatever we have to, but if you want it. And we had some people who were a little older who said, I'd rather die than quit. And there's this attitude that you really dovetail with when you're on the bike. You nurse them along the highway, up and over the hills. They get in after dark, you have the lights on them. And this has become very gratifying. Sometimes you get a little irritated if you think they're slowing you down. But you give them the confidence that, no, you're not slowing us down. We're going to get you through this day.
Coach Bob Davenport, former head of the football program at Taylor University, started Wandering Wheels back in the 1960s as a way to challenge young people. His group has made 68 trips across the country by bicycle. Bob has ridden 43 of those and was escorting the group by motorcycle the rest of the time. The group has a much shorter ride coming up July 18th and 19th from Gaston to LeSampville. Details at wanderingwheels.org.
Well, I'm so tired of crying, but I'm out on the road again. I'm on the road again.
Indiana Weekend, Real Radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line. Let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
We're talking with Coach Bob Davenport, who runs the group called Wandering Wheels with his wife Janish. He's pedaled across the country more than 40 times. If 6 weeks of 80-mile bicycling days sounds daunting, well, here's what a typical day is like.
Normally we'd start a day with a nice breakfast. In the dark, normally. We try to get on the road the minute we're legal, in the sense of the lights are off of the cars. And then we run about 10 hours. And our average miles, depending on the age group, average miles would be between 90 and 110 a day. That would get us across about a 3,500-mile stretch in 6 weeks with one full day off. Interesting. I get bored when I go to church. Not that I'm bad-mouthing church, but there's something about taking Sunday off. Well, you better believe they look forward to the day of rest. All of a sudden, it took on a really dynamic meaning. We got a whole day off. I could sleep in. I can, you know, if we have to go to church, that's fine. But a day off made a ton of sense. 6 days' work makes the Sabbath look really great.
You enjoy bicycling now. Tell me about what you like about bicycling and about your daily rides.
I have grown to be ancient, and I'm 82, and I've ridden, I don't know how many, probably 350,000 to 400,000 miles. And at one time it was a little bit of a contest of moving along as fast as you could with a little bit of reserve. And I've grown into looking forward to biking, but in a fun sense, in a recreational sense. It's become a new joy of mine, not having to beat someone.
What do you like about bicycling?
The freedom. I like the fact that it's a comfortable way to stay in shape, cardiovascular thing. I like the mechanics of the bicycle, and it's changing almost daily now, the kind of efficiency moves they put on the bike.
Tell me about the daily rides that you do around your home.
I brag about Grant County, and it's secondary roads. They're lightly traveled, very cordial, and it's got nice broken terrain. And we normally try to pick a day and run with the wind. So here you've got four directions. You go with a good road, almost any one of the four directions, and you can pick your route according to the way the wind's blowing. We are really blessed with a kind of a native animal life. We see, hardly ever ride without seeing deer. And one of my favorites is a possum. We picked up a dead mother possum and had two babies on her back who were still alive, and put them in my bag and took them home and bottle fed them and raised them. And you know, you never know during the day what you're, we've raised raccoons we found on the road, baby raccoons. I love the fact of the seasons changing, the farmers in the field, letting the fuel go dormant, and then you kind of, your whole spirit seems to identify with the farmer's pace, and then all of a sudden he's plowing the field, planting, and then you see the stubbles coming up, and before long, the corn is as high as an elephant's eye. You really run almost, you're synchronized with the conditions. You hurt when it's not raining. You hurt when the farmer's down under with the weather being not as the plus they like for it to be. You really almost wrap yourself in the whole seasonal thing.
One of the nice things about bicycling is that you're outdoors.
Well, that is a major plus. I have indoor equipment that I can ride if the weather's inclement, but it's almost torture. When you're out of doors, you got potholes to mess with, you've got wet roads, dry roads, you've got traffic that is, where we ride is not all that heavy, but you've got almost a combination of these things that make your bike riding competitive. And your competitor isn't an opponent as such, your competitor is all the things you bring to it, the way of weather, terrain. You look forward to the colors that the naturalness of Mother Nature brings.
Is there a spiritual dimension to being outside?
I think that comes packaged different for everyone, but for me, the spiritual dimension is having a good ride and you're tired. But it's funny, some of the things you remember longest are the ones that are negative on the road. You know, things that military men talk about are the tough times, not the real nice times when they had a Hershey bar or the cigarettes and this kind of thing. And I have learned, especially when I work with kids, that some of the things I chaff under in the way of bad conditions are going to be the thing they talk about most once the trip's over, they come back for reunions. We always talk about the tough times, the times we almost didn't make it. And you need I almost didn't make it times. There are times when you're on the bike. Well, I was in Wisconsin riding, and it started raining just really bad. And it was threatening. It wasn't even safe to be on the road. A guy in a pickup pulled alongside me and said, "Get in this truck, you're gonna get killed out there." And I rather willingly threw my bike in the truck, got inside, and we got to chatting and got down the road and the rain stopped. So I met a friend who was just as serendipitous as a meeting could be. And that's taught me a lesson, to do the same thing, to ask people if they need help, this kind of thing.
Got those highway blues, can't you hear my motor running? Bob Davenport. At age 82, he has 43 cross-country bicycling trips under his belt. His Wandering Wheels group seeks to provide bucket list experiences for people seeking to test themselves. They have a Cardinal Greenway ride coming up in July. Details at wanderingwheels.org.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
The bike is magical. First of all, it has a wonderful history. It goes back to about 1875. It's just fun to follow the evolution of the bicycle. You know, the Wright brothers started in a bicycle garage. Henry Ford started in a bicycle garage. And the bike hasn't changed much since the diamond frame came in about the turn of the century. The bike has not changed much at all. And like other things, the automobile, the speed that we travel in an airplane, what have you, the bike is still a bike. And I think I really identify with the simplicity of the mobility it creates and the ease it can make travel. You can experience travel with about a third the effort as opposed to walking.
This is the season for riding bicycles. What advice do you have to people who are dusting off their bikes, pulling them out of their garages? Maybe they don't ride a whole lot. What would you tell them?
Well, one of the biggies is we have more traffic. I'm going to speak a little despairingly here, but people are getting older and they're still very mobile. They're driving a lot more, but I'm old enough to know that I'm not quite as sharp reaction-wise as I used to be. So having as much brightness on as you can, the earlier you can identify with traffic that you're up ahead in your slow-moving vehicle, that gives them time to make adjustment in their own mind. Little things like being courteous. We really are guests on the road, and being slow down if it means that the car can get on by you safely. If you're riding with someone else, ride single file when you know you've got a problem with traffic. We maintain that if you're slowing traffic down to the point you've got as many as five cars built up behind you, pull off the road, let them get on by, smile and wave at them. Create a cordialness that will make it easier for the next group.
Have you seen cyclists who don't have the proper manners?
Oh, yeah. There are cyclists who, for some reason or other, it seemed like a rite of passage to them. Hey, look at me. I'm doing something harder than you're doing. You're driving a car. You're coasting down the road. I'm out here working. I have, in a sense, more rights than you do, which isn't the case. There ought to be a feeling of, I'm going to use the word humility or humbleness, that you are in a position where you're a guest in the car's company, and whatever you can do to kind of help them get on down the road is a real plus to the whole cycling community.
What kinds of things should people have in terms of the things that they wear to make themselves visible and more safe?
We maintain that the neon bright yellow lime color shirt is about as major as anything you can wear. We recommend a helmet, and then that's the highest point of your body, so getting yourself a bright helmet or put a light on the helmet. Blinking a light on the back of the bike doesn't hurt. There are times when that gets muted when the sun's shining on the back part of your person, but having the blinking light is a real plus. A mirror, I can't hardly ride anymore. I won't ride without a mirror. With the real gung-ho bikers, they don't think it's very cool, to ride with a mirror. I would say any of the general citizenry, you just really don't want to be out there without a mirror.
How has cycling changed in the time since you began?
Well, the change in cycling that I've noticed most, on Taylor's campus and other college campuses like Ball State, there's still a cycling community of people who do it rather practically, going from building to building. But by and large, back when I started this program in 64, the 10-speed bicycle was just coming online, and every kid wanted a 10-speed. Hey, it was cool to have a 10-speed. Cars had four on the floor. Now you got a bike with 10 on the bar. And we dovetailed with that. It was kind of a cool thing to have a 10-speed bicycle. That has changed a lot with the kids. This not nearly a want the way it was back in the early 60s. And I think cycling is falling off for the kid these days. Can't blame the high-tech thing for everything, but it seems like they're almost would rather experience it with a virtual reality than to get out and hurt a little bit.
You're seeing strong interest in the things that you do in Wandering Wheels among people in their 50s and 60s. What's going on?
I think that generation of kids that we dovetailed with back in the 60s have gotten older, a lot more discretionary spending and free time, and they're coming back to their roots. It seems like there's a real visitation on the part of the older cycling community that started out when they were 13, 14, 15. And they had that lull in between their raising a family and getting themselves into retirement mode. And then now that they're in the retirement mode, a lot of them are coming back to their cycling interests.
Talk about how the safety of cycling has changed, especially in the past 10 years or so.
Well, there's an awareness, I think, on the part of the general community that the bikers are out there. They do have rights. I'm not sure how to identify that community, but there are people who are vehement about the fact you don't belong on the road. You're slowing us down. And we need to be patient with that group of people that have got a lot of other issues in their social life or whatever. Domestic problems at home. But if they meet a biker on the road and that biker's slowing them down, and if that being slowed down dovetails with their attitude for where they are right now domestically or work-wise, what have you, it's like gasoline and matches. I had a lady bawl me out, and I listened to her, heard her out. I had a kid with me who was listening to the exchange, and she just ran and raved, cussed a little bit. And I said, "Honey, you have a good day, okay?" And the kid that was with me smiled. He said, "That's the best advice I've ever heard. You know, you got yourself a little bit off the potential high horse." So there are times like that where we have to eat a little crow. You just can't beat a positive attitude, a smiley face.
Bob Davenport, the former Taylor University football coach who started leading 3,500-mile cross-country bicycle tours across the United States and has made the crossing 43 times. Now he and his wife Janish and their Wandering Wheels group are putting together a short trip on the Cardinal Greenway for mid-July. You can see the details at wanderingwheels.org. Interesting to hear him talk about bike safety. A couple takeaways might be wear your helmet, get a mirror, understand that not everybody is going to be in a great mood out on the road, but taking the high road is often the best way. That's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Sean Ashcraft. Glad you could join us this time and hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you would like more information or have a suggestion. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Sean Ashcraft. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from Dillman's Furniture of Muncie, serving East Central Indiana with home furnishings from Flex Steel, Bassett, and Simmons Beauty Rest. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.